Welcome back to Owned and Operated, where we dive deep into the businesses we own, the businesses we are acquiring, and we also bring on guests to talk about their operating struggles. If you like what you hear today, follow John and Brandon on Twitter. That's John at Wilson Companies and Brandon at Brandon Nyro. Also, check out our weekly newsletter, where we teach you how to be an effective operator. You can sign up by clicking the link in the description of this podcast or by visiting ownedandoperated.com. That's ownedandoperated.com. Check it out. All right. Today, we talked to Andrew Gazdecki. Andrew has been a lifetime entrepreneur. He started and sold three different internet businesses in a variety of industries and has grown MicroAcquire to over $600,000 in ARR in a little over a year. Andrew has had a few of these successes, but on this episode, we learn a ton about his past failures and the struggles he's gone through to build great businesses. Enjoy this episode.
If you listen to our show, you know that we can spend months sourcing businesses, talking with them, negotiating LOIs, conducting due diligence, all for a deal to fall through at the finish line. MicroAcquire solves that whole problem, whether you're buying or selling a business. As a seller, you're getting introduced to over 50,000 trusted buyers with total anonymity. As a buyer, you get to sort through profitable, vetted sellers and close in 30 days. We don't own any digital businesses yet, but over the next year, we're intending to grab a couple, and MicroAcquire is going to be our choice for a sourcing platform. All right, welcome back to Owned and Operated. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to give us that 5-star on iTunes. I think we broke 10. Super proud of that. And check out ownedandoperated.com. Sign up for our newsletter and follow Brandon and I on Twitter. Yeah, we have good stuff. So today we have Andrew Gazdecki on with us from MicroAcquire. And MicroAcquire, this is not a sponsored episode, just so that part's out of the way. MicroAcquire has been sponsoring us for a little while, and we're super grateful. But we just really wanted to talk to Andrew about how he built what he was doing, what it looks like next, and just sort of dive into the ops on MicroAcquire. So welcome, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. All right, could you give us like a 45-second spiel?
Like me? Background?
Yeah, MicroAcquire? Give us a backstory, man. Give us a Spider-Man backstory.
In 45 seconds, I'll give you the 2-minute version. So been an entrepreneur my whole career, built and sold two different companies. One was a do-it-yourself mobile app builder. I started that in college, basically right when the iPhone came out. So that was right place, right time, obvious solution to an obvious problem in a massive market. And just to give you an idea of how early we are, we were with that business, we considered making a BlackBerry version. I'm glad we didn't do that. After that, yeah.
That definitely dates it pretty nicely.
That would have been live for like 3 months and then we would have taken it down. But after that, moved over to building a cryptocurrency trading engine. The thesis behind that business was we were working on speeding up transaction times on the Ethereum blockchain. That company was acquired by a strategic acquirer called BNK to the Future. And I should mention Business Apps was acquired by ESW Capital. And after I sold my second business, I was like, you know what? Being CEO is kind of hard. Maybe I'll take a shot at being number two at a company. So I was CRO at a company called Spiff, joined at essentially zero revenue, helped them grow to about two. They raised a 15 million Series A, recently raised a 44 million Series A. I resigned once the Series A was completed, like job done, like all that sort of stuff.
Why?
I was focused on MicroAcquire. I was working on MicroAcquire on the side. Yeah. That was a business that I, you know, was absolutely in love with. And that's what I'm doing full time.
The crypto thing, what year was it?
So I actually started that business right as we were going into due diligence with Business Apps. So that was 2017, like right when the first crypto bubble started forming. Right. So I've been buying, like I have transactions in my Coinbase account where I bought like 200 Bitcoin for like $20,000 and I sold it for like $23,000 and thought I was a genius. So I've been in the cryptocurrency blockchain space for a while. I'm out of it now, but saw an opportunity to, you know, basically take when you send Ethereum or Bitcoin, it takes like 45 minutes. And so we were working with a framework called Plasma, which it was a white paper written by the founder of Ethereum and another individual named Joseph Poon. And so we worked on that very, very difficult project in terms of like the technical aspects of it, but learned a lot, made some progress on that. And yeah.
That was good. I feel like we have a lot to dive into. So two exits. Yeah. I don't think we've talked to anyone that's done an exit. No, James Camp did an exit.
Technically, I have three. So there. Okay. Well, this is my favorite. This is my biggest exit. So okay. I sold a job board in college called Phone Freelancer. It was basically an Upwork clone. I downloaded a script. I bought it for like $500, put on a server in college. And it was just niche to mobile developers. And so I started noticing people posting the same sort of job over and over and over. Like, I'm a luxury restaurant. I'm a luxury hotel. I'd like to have a loyalty program, push on vacations for my customers. And they're paying like $50,000 to like $70,000 for these mobile apps. And so I ended up selling that business for like $50,000 in college, which I translate to $50 trillion in college when everyone's broke.
Yeah.
That ended up being the seed money for business apps. And that's how I came up with the idea. I just saw a lot of people requesting very similar apps. And I thought, there's do-it-yourself website builders. Why not a do-it-yourself mobile app builder for small businesses? So started that when I was 21 in college and ran that till I was 28. And it was actually acquired 3 years ago, like to the date last month. I get those Facebook updates. So yeah.
Man, that's awesome. I feel like I saw something about this on Twitter the other day. And it was like a parable style story. And someone asked, hey, you know, when did you become wealthy? And the guy was like, oh, when I was 22, I sold everything I owned and like learned how to live off the backpack that I had with me or something like that. And it was like, but what about when you exited for, you know, X amount of dollars out of this company? It was like, no, I got rich in that moment. I think the seed money college exit, that's awesome. Yeah,
probably yeah. That was so for additional background, I grew up very poor. So not like, you know, my life was like terrible, but I was born in Detroit. Father passed away when I was six. Grew up in a town called San Clemente, which is a beautiful town. So I'd go over to my friend's house and they have these huge mansions. And so money was always kind of top of mind for me. So that was a real driver for me to, I guess, become an entrepreneur, more of as a survival mechanism, not like I need to hustle. I need to make money rather than, hey, this is cool. This is trendy. I want to be on TechCrunch or whatever. So that's what got me into entrepreneurship and been addicted ever since.
Yeah. Now I think, I mean, that's cool. And that's a good backstory.
Sorry to interrupt, but the point I was trying to make, the first company, when I sold that for $50,000, that literally felt like $50 billion to me, just because I was completely broke before that.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be life-changing. That'd be huge. And I think now you're an entrepreneur helping entrepreneurs, which that's like, I don't know, that feels full circle to me. Like, that's cool.
It's honestly my dream job. I mean, I always joke around with people like, you know, on the weekends, some people like to play tennis. I like to play startup. It's my sport. It's my passion. I look and research pretty much every new startup that I can possibly find. I just love technology, and you know, I feel fortunate that I found something I love and that pays well.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, we've got some questions then. I've got some questions out of this.
Ask me whatever you want, man. I told you before we started this, John was like, all right, we got some prep. And I was like, nope, let's go.
let's hit record.
Yeah.
I kind of have one. I guess the basis of it all is why technology? Like, what's the interest for you specifically in it?
Yeah. Why not plumbing, Andrew?
I'd say it started with my childhood. I just saw the internet and just had this light bulb go off where, wow, from the comfort of my own home, I could build a business. And so I used to do this thing where I'd start a new business every single summer. And some were dumb, some were eBay. They were actually all awesome in my book, but most of them failed. But everything from like an eBay store to even like some embarrassing businesses, like a World of Warcraft website where you can buy gold. Just think of it as like,
dude, I would have bought that gold when I played WoW. I would have bought from you. I probably did.
Yeah, I had a EverQuest one too. I used to buy like level whatever EverQuest characters and then resell them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but, I was just.
So like arbitrage the difference. So you'd buy it at like minimum level and then max it?
Yeah. So I'd look for spelling mistakes. I'd look for spelling mistakes on certain characters and then I would then resell them based on correcting what they spelled incorrectly, or they would just be priced really low. And it was kind of, cool because I was playing the game. And so I'd log in. I'm like, oh, I'm like a badass for like a month and then I'd sell it.
Sure.
So it was kind of like buying like a Ferrari. Like this is the nerdiest like version of this, but like buying a Ferrari, driving around for a little bit and then selling it, making a little bit of money. But yeah, it started like everything from like a real estate marketing company, which completely failed because I don't know anything about real estate. And I was like 16. What else did I do? I mean, there's just a number of other things that little side hustles, little businesses. And I think, you know, the key lesson there is just, you know, the more businesses that you build, even if they fail, you learn along the way. And as I continued to move forward in my entrepreneurial journey or whatever you want to call it, I learned how to make a website. I learned how to set up payments, learned how to like conversion rate optimization, SEO, like all the stuff necessary to build an online business. I just slowly kind of accumulated those skill sets just through building multiple businesses. I didn't go on Twitter and be like, how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you hire people? Like I just did it. And then that's, in my opinion, the fastest way to learn.
What was your favorite like failure, like business idea that just like totally flopped, but you were like, yeah, this is the best.
The World of Warcraft one by far. Oh, so yeah. The like, World of Warcraft.
It would have been dope.
Like, no, let me explain though. So this was the summer of my junior year in college. I went to CSU Chico State, graduated with a 2.07, which is the lowest in history of the school, which I'm really proud of.
Yeah.
The reason for that
but
is.
But you graduated.
Yeah. So you have to have a 2.0 as a bar, or I guess a floor to graduate. But I went a fifth year to get an entrepreneurship or a minor in entrepreneurship so I can get financial aid to work on business apps. Didn't show up to any classes, failed everything. All the teachers would joke like, hey, Andrew's not showing up, but he's building a business, I guess. So that's kind of cool. But the biggest heartbreak was definitely the World of Warcraft website. So the way that business worked was it was just a simple affiliate website. It was very hands-off. I basically connected with a group that sold literally like some dude in World of Warcraft, like a ogre would come up to you and hand you like 50,000 gold. And that's how and then you go buy a sword or whatever. And so I'd get a 20% commission on that. And people would use this as like a currency exchange. So some people would spend like $100,000 like on this digital gold. But what happened was, so our main customer acquisition channel was Google Ads. And so when I first started, we were bidding on key terms like buy WoW gold, World of Warcraft gold, etc. And it was like 10 cents a click. And I'm thinking, I quit my job. I was working at Sears at the time in the electronics section. Yeah, not my favorite job. So I was making like $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a month. And I'm thinking like, I'm going to be like rich all through college. Like I started looking at cars I wanted to buy. Like I was like, this is it. Like, and I don't have to do anything aside from answering a few customer service emails. But what happened was the cost for those key terms went up from like 10 cents, like $20, and the market got saturated. And then basically the customer acquisition cost was higher than the lifetime value of the customer. So that was a heartbreak. That one was like a bummer. I was like, oh man, college is going to be awesome. We're balling out. And then it also happened for a short period. So it was like a 4-month run of, you know, doing well. And then after that, it just went down the tube. So got in early and then everybody ran in, and that's the story behind that.
Hilarious. So I played WoW and like,
what was your character?
I was a prot paladin.
Nice. I was a rogue.
All right. I can see it. I can see it.
I'm not a backstabber.
Okay. It was more like sly, you know.
For those who don't know the game, rogue, like the main, like, this is so nerdy, but whatever.
Like, we're already here, man.
We're in the back, like, you know, the backstab for a rogue is like, you know, you're super sneaky. I thought they just looked the coolest, but.
I mean, honestly, they They totally did. But so I always wondered who was behind like the gold buying websites. I always thought it was like, I don't know. I don't even know. I guess like a bunch of Chinese companies like stealing, creating fake gold or something. But apparently it was you.
No, so I was just an affiliate. So I wasn't actually involved in the like mining the gold. I wasn't like going out, like I didn't have time for that. I was affiliated with a company that did that. I believe they're called like IG Vault or there's a bunch of them, but I could have sworn it was called like IGN. But yeah, they have affiliate programs. You drive them business just like any other affiliate program. You drive them business, you get a commission, and found a way to drive business to them very cost effectively. That went to complete shit and went back to the drawing board, and my life's been downhill ever since.
Oh man, that was really funny. And honestly, yeah, that I think that business probably got even harder as it went. Just, you know, because the game, I think the game is still going like 20 years later, which is amazing. So that has to mean that like inflation is super real and probably hyperinflation where there's so much currency that they don't know what to do with it. Yeah, that would be an interesting economic study. Like what happens with a game's inflation?
I have no idea. I just want to say for the record on this podcast, I have not played World of Warcraft in over a decade. Yeah. I'm a changed man. But I will say there were times, this game is so addicting where I would tell my girlfriend at the time I'm hanging out with my friends.
Nice.
And I tell my friends I'm hanging out with my girlfriend just so everyone's like kind of crisscrossed. And then I just play all night. It's a very addictive game. Stay away from it.
Yes, stay away from it. Same. Yeah, it was a decade, but you know, it was a good time.
I feel like I can relate with you on that level, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a generation. You've got to be probably like 28 to 30, somewhere in there to like 40. And like, if you're in there, you've touched WoW at least once. Like it's happened. It happened once, you know, your buddy played it. You walked in, he told you he was hanging out with his girlfriend. You walk in there, you find him. That's pretty good. Okay, so I've always wondered that. That's hilarious. That would be a business that I think would have been fun pre-inflation. Back to the inflation thing real quick. I did actually read a study. Who owns WoW? Blizzard. So Blizzard, and they're like a publicly traded company, and they have a bunch of games. I think Call of Duty is one of their like verticals. Anyways, so they had a game where they had a hyperinflation problem. Diablo, I think. And I read an article about this a couple of months ago, and it was fascinating. Someone was drawing comparisons to the hyperinflation problem in Diablo and the current potential inflation problem in the U.S. And they were just like, this is where it goes. And they showed, you know, it was like the game makers were the Fed. And it was really interesting. It was interesting. So everyone should Google that. It's fascinating stuff.
I'll definitely check that out. I mean, that's on a lot of people's minds. I mean, yeah, everybody listening to this, definitely go on Diablo, World of Warcraft. That's where you find all the inflation information all the before information anybody else. You need. Jerome Powell's in there figuring it out. He's like, what's going on with all these sword prices going up? We got to print some more money.
Yeah. Help the common man raid, right? Okay. All right. We're going to move beyond games. Okay. So now your project is MicroAcquire, which is awesome. And if people aren't aware of it, you should check out Andrew's Twitter, but also just microacquire.com. I'm going to give my super brief explanation of it, and then you can totally correct me where I'm wrong. But it is a marketplace website.
Totally wrong.
Damn it. Just like that.
No, I'm just kidding. Keep going.
But it's a marketplace website for like online businesses of all sizes. It doesn't seem like you have a niche size, right? It's like anything goes?
No. So all listings are manually approved. Sometimes, depending on the, we look mostly at the quality of the company. So if it's like pre-revenue, really well-built quality product, we'll approve it. But generally, we look for revenue-generating SaaS and e-commerce companies. We moved into categories like crypto, mobile apps, a number of other just different scalable software company categories. But generally, our sweet spot is anywhere between 100,000 revenue all the way up to 10 million in revenue. And then we do have kind of like a fun micro SaaS section that has like you know, the pre-revenue or making $1,000 a month or something like that. That's kind of my favorite category.
Those are cool. I've seen a few of those and I keep having to stop myself from buying one just because like there's enough going on in my life, but like they're so cool. They're cool. Like I found a Twitter app one.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I want to help as many entrepreneurs as possible. And like a lot of entrepreneurs are always thinking like, what's an idea? Like, how do I get started? And then once you have an idea, it takes, you know, 6 months, you know, probably you can do it sooner, but you just buy a business. You have a working, you know, product. You have some traction with customers. So you have an idea of where to find these customers, how to get more of them. So I think it's a new form of entrepreneurship that's forming. Obviously, it's been around forever, just traditional private equity, but looking at larger businesses. So now we're starting to see a lot of just, you know, first time buyers, people looking to get into entrepreneurship that may not have an idea, just wants to run a small software company and scale that up. And so, yeah, I love posting those businesses just because I look at them and I'm like, dang, I could grow the hell out of this thing. But got to stay focused and not get, you know, high on my own supply.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah. So, I mean, is that an eventual funnel? Because I think that'd be sweet. I mean, you'd basically get first pick.
No. You know, originally I thought about it when I launched MicroFire, like this would be a good deal flow platform. But what's become apparent over the last specifically 6 months is just the opportunity to help thousands of entrepreneurs buy and sell businesses and just make that whole process much easier than it is today is a much larger opportunity, in my opinion, than me buying a bunch of companies. And it's just distracting. And I also like building businesses. And so I'm just having a ton of fun with MicroQuire. So I'm one of those entrepreneurs where it's really hard for me to stay focused. So I think I've done a good job so far, but no, that's not in our plans and won't be in our plans anytime soon.
I guess I just have, like, we do have some standard questions that we go through, but now I'm just curious what other potential verticals there could be, like a financing vertical.
I mean, we have a lot of like fintech. I mean, just everything you could possibly, like anything you could think of in terms of like a software business is probably a MicroQuire.
Yeah.
So financial services, like I have listed some, you know, communities of like stock tracking applications or, you know, communities of stock traders. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Same with crypto, like crypto communities. Those are other categories that we're adding. Even just newsletters, big newsletters with stock tips, crypto tips.
How do newsletters trade? Like what's a typical...
What was that?
How do they trade? Like, what's the multiple on a newsletter? I've always just wondered.
It really depends. I mean, typically, obviously, size of the newsletter and the quality and just the engagement. You can have a million person newsletter, but if no one's opening it, it's going to be worth zero. But if it's a really targeted audience, like let's say there was one newsletter that was specifically focused on engineers and developers. And so that was acquired, I believe, at TTM Profit, like 4.5 or something like that, which I think was a little high, but it was a little bit of a strategic buy for the buyer. And that, you know, might lead into another question you might have, like what types of buyers are on MicroQuire? So tons of strategic buyers, CEOs of public companies, lots of private equity groups from traditional private equity that looks at, you know, the 10 million and above range all the way down to the micro PE. Lots of, you know, second time entrepreneurs, lots of venture backed companies as well that are looking for acquihires or just looking to plug product gaps within their current company. So, you know, we've really done it's surprising to me at just the caliber of buyers that have been attracted to MicroQuire. So it's a little bit of everything. You can get a hold of a CEO of literally, you know, or maybe not the CEO, but the corp dev team of a public company to a well-known private equity group to a well-known entrepreneur all at the same time.
That is really interesting. So I'm trying to work through buyer acquisition. That is high caliber. How'd you find them? Like, did they just find you or did you, what do you feel like in the journey of building MicroQuire got you that high caliber buyer?
I would say hitting the phones. That was the first thing I did when I launched MicroQuire was I just talked to a number of different VC firms, seed investors, other entrepreneurs that had large audiences with other startups, really just kind of trying to create, you know, unofficial partnerships. And so that led to more buyers, more startups being listed on the platform. And then I listed on Product Hunt January of 2020, got product of the day. And that's when everything just started exploding. And ever since then, we've been adding about 500 new users a day.
Yeah. Same cadence, always 500? Or has it been increasing the amount of users?
It'll range. Some days we see like 200, and that'll be like sad face gas. But typically around, you know, 400 to 500, we're seeing pretty consistently at this point. And that's been trending upwards.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's the percentage of paid versus just a user?
Total users, we have about 70,000. Paid users, we have about 2,500. I'm rounding those up, but that sounds about right.
Okay, I've got one more thing. And then Brandon has a question. He's looking at me.
I see the look.
Yeah.
I see the look,
yeah.
Brandon. What you got?
I get your newsletter like every week and it's awesome. And it talks about the deals that came out. And I mean, can you turn that newsletter, or maybe it already is, but can that become a profitable section of your business? Where, who does this? Biz by Sale. They sponsor some companies, like the broker sponsors it to be in the newsletter or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we could. I get offers all the time like, hey, can we sponsor your newsletter? Can we do this? I think what's special about MicroQuire is we don't put favorites on startups. We're not saying like, hey, this startup gave us $5,000. You should take an extra look at it. We want buyers to look at the quality of the startup just based on the metrics, the business, rather than us getting, you know, a couple $1,000. I think that's a really important company value for us, is that, you know, we want to bring transparency and trust to this market. And, you know, we feel that goes against that. So if there's featured listings just being paid at the top, those aren't necessarily the best listings. Those are just listings that are willing to pay. And so, no, the only revenue stream we have right now is the premium buyer program. And then we're going to be rolling out some pretty slick third-party services on top of that pretty soon, which I'm happy to talk about.
So we are going to talk about that. But just to clarify, a seller doesn't give you a fee?
No. So to sell a MicroQuire, it's 100% free. There's no fees, no commissions. You can literally sign up and write, I have a SaaS company that's in the email marketing space. Fill out your TTM revenue, TTM profit, last month's revenue, last month's profit. Do you have a P&L, tech stack, competitors? And we'll go through and we'll make your profile look absolutely beautiful. I have a team that helps me do that. We'll even create a presentation for you. So rather than you spending an hour trying to figure out how to make your listing look great and appeal to buyers, we take care of all that for you. But to sell a MicroQuire, it's completely free for founders.
That's dope as hell. I'm into that. I have a plumbing company to sell.
Nice. Don't think quite qualifies into that.
Put it on there. Well, we haven't.
Septics, it's basically a SaaS.
We've talked about moving to Main Street businesses over time. I think, you know, because there's so much that we want to do with MicroQuire in terms of, like, let's say you're selling, like, a good example would be business apps, where I grew that company to about $10 million in annual recurring revenue. When I sold the business, I had light M&A advisory from a buddy who was an investment banker. My angel investor was like, hey, use this law firm. And so we're going to be building in these third-party services where, John, if you wanted to go on and sell your plumbing company and you weren't comfortable, or you just didn't have time, you have a business that you have to run, you don't have time to go through, you know, and filter out who's a serious buyer and who's not a serious buyer. We're going to have the ability for you to hire an M&A advisor to help through that process, find legal counsel, other things like financing, and even wealth advisory. So, and then other things like just the typical things like due diligence, data rooms. What is your startup worth based on real data driven? Like, we'll take in your Stripe analytics and then we'll compare that against other deals that have closed on MicroQuire. So we're kind of rocking and rolling, and we're trying to think as big as possible and really just trying to build the platform I wish I had, where when I went to sell business apps, instead of it taking, you know, five years to sell, I could sell within, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, depending on the size of the deal.
So do you think you can do all that with just the buyer subscriptions? Because that sounded like a ton of value add.
No. So over time, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be layering on, like I said, these third-party services, and we're going to be offering all this completely free for a long period of time. But over time, we're going to be thinking about how can we add enough value onto the MicroQuire platform so the whole transaction takes place within MicroQuire. And this is all just napkin idea stuff. So I don't have like, hey, this is how exactly how here's it's going to go. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a big part of startups too. It's just, you know, but right now when, you know, buyer and seller comes to terms, they just kind of say, all right, this sounds good. Let's go in this like back alley and we use escrow.com, upload your stuff to Google folders. You know, we'll transfer the assets using like this Notion doc. You know, it's just, it's super unorganized. There's like five different things. So we want to bring all that on the platform so we can justify an optional cost. So nothing will be mandatory. It'll always be free to sell on MicroQuire and buy on MicroQuire, where you got to pay the subscription to contact sellers. And a funny story about how that rolled out. But yeah, we're looking to find ways to add so much value that we save buyers and sellers time and increase trust during the transaction, that they know that it's going to be a successful acquisition and not a huge headache the whole time.
So for someone like me, like I have no business buying a SaaS, right? Like should not, cannot.
Brandon, I've got some SaaSes I'd like to interest you in.
Bad idea. But does MicroQuire pre-qualify or screen potential buyers, or is that kind of anybody who wants to attempt to buy can?
Yeah, so we have some requirements. You got to have a LinkedIn profile. I would never sell a company to someone without a LinkedIn profile. I don't care if you have an opinion on it. Like if I can't see who you are, where you've worked, references of other people you've worked with, that's a barrier of trust for me. That's important. And that's why that's built into MicroQuire. So if you sign up for MicroQuire Premium, your LinkedIn profile doesn't work and you're just some random person on the internet, we'll ban you from the marketplace. Sorry, there's too many other marketplaces and trust is at the core of MicroQuire. So I repeat the question. I kind of went on a rant on the LinkedIn. Buyers.
Yeah, you really got into that link. You were passionate for a second there. I was like, dude's selling me LinkedIn.
We get it a lot. Some people are like, why do I need to enter my LinkedIn? And we're like, you know, we're going to be building in other ways to basically authenticate who you are. But if you're a person today and you don't have a LinkedIn account, even just a basic one, it's not updated. Like, what do you do? Who are you? So it's just been a great way to really build trust in the marketplace.
Like I use my Twitter. Like I can just send people to my Twitter. I'm like, I'm real. Look at me on Twitter.
We want to have like Twitter login. That's another good one. But we just started with LinkedIn and that's been working out great.
That's probably a good idea. That's a professional platform.
Yeah, but every buyer that signs up, we review their account. We make sure it looks good. We make sure that they're a real person and it's not just some, you know, person that might not. Like there's a number of different things that we look for when someone signs up for premium. So to answer your question, we do vet every single buyer that signs up.
So then, I guess we'll backtrack. I don't want to go to the, I have a question for the end process, but I don't want to skip all the steps.
Nice.
So maybe as we start all the way back at the beginning, what does it look like? Like, what is your involvement in it? Because from a ownership standpoint, do you have day-to-day involvement in the processes and flows, or do you have a whole team that does that work for you?
Straight into the nitty-gritty. Nice work, Brandon.
You know.
Yeah. So in the beginning, I was working like 4 a.m. to like 10 p.m. I was setting up the profiles. I was writing the newsletters, scheduling the social media posts. That's for MicroQuire. And then I was doing my own marketing, doing podcasts like this, had my own podcast. I was writing content. I even wrote a book. So I'm kind of just like a workhorse. I'm by far like not the smartest person you'll ever meet, but I like to think I have a pretty good work ethic. So that's how it was 6 months ago before we really started ramping up hiring, realizing that I was the bottleneck in the business. And so since then we've hired, you know, a customer support team. We have two members there. Hired back my old COO, VP of product, VP of engineering, head of marketing. And we just had an offer accepted for a creative designer. And all of these people worked at my previous company, Business Apps. So they were through the acquisition of that company and we're looking to do another run. So my life's getting a lot easier now. So I get to hang out with you guys and, you know, spend time talking about World of Warcraft all day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all of those positions originally were hats you wore then, correct? At some point or another?
Yeah, it was a grind. But the main thing to understand is like, yeah, it sounds like a lot of work, but I truly love what like I'm doing. Like, it's not work. Like, I wake up in the morning and the number one thing I look at is startup submitted. And so from there, we'll reject and approve ones that look good. And it's just like, it's awesome to see just like the types of businesses that I see come through, like the most niche businesses making millions of dollars a year. And, you know, it's just the buyers that I get to interface with. It's just such, it's like my dream job. And so it wasn't really work. So it was like me just replace WoW with MicroQuire. That's what I was doing.
It sounds like another game to me. Nice. Like, this sounds like a game.
Yeah. So I was having a ton of fun, but now, you know, I realize you can only spend, and this is like the paradox of, you know, a solo founder where, you know, you get to a point where you can only spend 10% of your time on product, 10% of your time on marketing, like 10% of your time on operations, you know, so you need to start, you know, getting people to actually spend full focus on those areas. And so that's what I've done. And that's made my life a lot easier.
With all those hires, do you feel, is the position moving or the company moving to a position of growth or stabilization?
Both. I would say stabilization came first. I think stabilization would have taken longer if I had not previously worked with all these individuals. Like, I need to get to know you. What is your communication cadence? You know, how do we vibe together? You know, what's your humor? Like, who are you as a person? That's very important to me. I look to hire people in basically in this order: motivation, attitude, and skill set. So I'm looking always for really motivated people, awesome people that, you know, make you laugh at the end of the day, but then are good at their jobs. And so the group I'm working with now, we were able to just kind of fast track that. Like, I already know who you are. I already know, like, we get along great. We don't really need to communicate as much as probably newer teams. So now we're moving full ahead in a growth mode. I hope we're going to try to go into growth mode.
Yeah.
I'll put it as that. I can't guarantee, you know, we're going to just rocket ship up into the right, but that's our plan.
So, I mean, growth mode would be more memberships and then a bunch more value add stuff.
Value adds is the key. Memberships have been trending up pretty nicely this month alone, but that's obviously not how we're going to build a big business. So, really, the vision for MicroQuire is we want to bring this entire fragmented market together. We basically want to build the Zillow of M&A. So again, what is your startup worth? Like, how do you find someone to represent you during the sale? What is the MLS of all businesses that are available on the market for sale? How do we build tools to make those transactions easier rather than using five different, you know, tools? And then how do we build trust within that marketplace and in that community? So that's kind of the high level goal of ours, is, you know, really being, you know, the center point of all acquisitions, really changing the way that businesses are bought and sold, because a lot of it's done offline. Like, you go, you shake hands and stuff like that. That works for a lot of markets, but specifically tech, a lot of that's moving online. And so we're looking to capture on that kind of riding tailwind that we're benefiting from and help as many businesses get acquired.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things about, so obviously we buy, like, you know, old school businesses, and it's really interesting how liquid the marketplace is for digital businesses. Like, it's like a liquid market. Just, you know, people can do 10-day transactions or 30-day transactions.
I've seen faster. I've seen from the day it was listed, it's gone.
Yeah, and like gone and like probably, you know, transition the next day. And for us, it's so illiquid. I'm sure that'll get a little bit better as time goes on. But I wonder, with MicroQuire, you compared it to Zillow, and I was thinking about the instant offer thing, and not like you guys buying it, but I wonder if there was a way. That just seems to be a whole thing in real estate right now. Like, we have a guest coming on in a week or two, and he runs a real estate brokerage company, like one of the best in class ones in the area. And it's really cool. And on top of that, he built a startup called Flash House, which is like I don't know that I want to call it tech enabled, because I think it's tech centric. They basically, you put in your info and they buy your house in like an hour or something. It's totally crazy.
Yeah. Like Open Door.
Yeah.
We've thought of that. I don't think we'll move into it, but we called it like Startup Certified Pre-Owned, where we basically buy the company, we fix it up because we've all, you know, grown SaaS companies. We know how to scale them. Usually most of the companies I look at, the first thing I think is like, man, just fix that. Just describe your product a little bit simpler. Like these little small improvements can make such a huge difference. So there is an opportunity to potentially even arbitrage a microquery where you can just fix up these very small items like conversion rate optimization or just mainly positioning, messaging and positioning. Just clearly articulate what do, what problem do you sell to, or what problem do you solve and specifically for who. So that's something we've thought about, but it gets messy, you know, if we do one wrong transaction but down the road, who knows? That's definitely something we've talked about. I think that could be an interesting model.
I think one of the coolest things about like a marketplace style business is the data. Like you have all the data, right? You've got the data for what people think businesses are worth. You have the data for what people actually buy them for. And you have like all this ridiculous amount of lead flow of deals and buyers. And I'm like, man, there's got to be, like, I know that this isn't your focus, but like, that's the part that like really interests me about the microacquire model is like, if just like you said, man, if you did this, I'm not telling you how to do your thing. But like, if I owned it, I'd be like, yeah, hell yeah. I want to take the vertical of buying shit because that'd be sweet. But I don't, you know, I'm not as focused as you are.
I mean, and that's something that we're working on too, specifically with, you know, the additional team hires. I don't have time to compile all that data. I do the best I can, but I'm not writing like a 40-page report on the state of the SaaS. Like, nice. I have other things to do, sorry. But we will be starting to write content around that because we do have a lot of acquisition data. We've done over 300 acquisitions, over 100 million in deal volume, ranging from e-commerce to SaaS to micro SaaS. So like multiples get pretty weird when, you know, it's a 5,000 year company compared to like a 500,000 a year company. It's easier to value the $500,000 a year company than the 5K company because you're giving a little bit of goodwill for just building the product. So we have a ton of data on that and we're going to be compiling that and we'll put out a report soon and it'll be a showstopper, I hope.
I'm super engaged. Like that sounds really cool.
Yeah. That goes to the core of just microquery too, is we want to unveil just the curtains of, you know, again, trust and transparency. Like this is what we're seeing in the market. You know, this is the truth of what we're seeing. Obviously every marketplace or every broker or every investment bank has different data sets, but we're going to be openly sharing that. And we have some cool ideas where we want to have like live dashboards where you can see how many startups we took live, the total revenue, the number of letter of intents that have been sent, letter of intents received, deals closed for months. So we're going to be having like a full sort of like, this is what's going on in, you know, the world of microquery pretty soon. Not pretty soon, but like eventually. In the
next year or two, right?
Just no, I'd say 6 months. We're rocking and rolling on. R&D is, we're ramping up probably the fastest right now.
Yeah. I mean, that report honestly sounds awesome. There's some PE firm does that for small business, or not really small, like lower middle market. It does give a fascinating view into what the market actually is. Because, you know, everyone's, most buyers are constantly complaining about how high the sellers are asking and like what current multiples are. And then they, you know, the study gets released once a quarter or something like that. And it gives a huge amount of transparency into what is actually transacting. And it's cool. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I'll say is I've met more startup valuation experts than I can count since launching microquery. Everyone from, one thing that just kind of like confuses me is, you know, typically, you know, SaaS companies and just other, you know, software companies have traded at, let's call it like 3 to 5 times SE. And with the stock market at an all-time high, housing at an all-time, everything's at an all-time high. Like, I don't understand why people like get, like their minds are blown when it's like, think prices are going up for like everything. They're like, what? But like, venture capital is staying the same. And it's like, what? Where have you been, man? Like, So, you know, that's one interesting thing I've seen is definitely the increase in, you know, asking prices. And then in terms of, you know, the actual final like sale price of the businesses growing up.
I'm going to backpedal for one. Can I ask? Come on. I'm curious about it. So you gather all this information, right? When a company goes up for sale and you know the revenue, all that kind of information, you gather information and you screen your buyers. What kind of information do you get, we'll say at close or post close, you know, sales price, any of that kind of information? You're talking about all that data, right, that you have. Do you get like the final numbers? Like what was the final negotiations, all that kind of stuff?
Candidly, no, because we try to be really respectful to the buyers and sellers. Like we don't ask like, hey, what were the terms? What were the price? Tell us now.
Yeah.
But most buyers are actually pretty open about it. They're like, hey, we bought it at this. Because I do ask and I say, hey, no worries if you don't want to share this. But we are building in mechanics where you can kind of do that automatically. Like, you know, this is the price we sold it at. These are the terms. We're also building in things like a letter of intent builder, so we can see the terms, also make it easier to submit offers. But candidly, like I don't have like 100% like a crystal ball into every single deal, nor do we ever want to have that, just because we do respect the privacy of buyers. And sometimes like they just don't want to tell us, and that's completely fine.
I figured it'd always be interesting to see like how we keep going back and forth of the seller finance versus SP and all that kind of stuff to see what that type of industry looks like, you know, what type of payment terms and how all that kind of works out.
Yeah, I think financing is interesting in this industry. Go ahead. I mean, obviously, you know it way better than me.
Yeah, definitely. And I've written about that a few times, like common deal structures that SCM MicroQuire, how does seller financing work? And a big differentiator for MicroQuire is we're focused on the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur and the founder is our customer, not the buyer. We're not like MicroQuire, come here, get the cheapest deals you possibly can. Our message is founders, come to MicroQuire so you can sell your company for higher than, you know, most typical brokers without any sort of fees or commissions or headaches. And so we educate them on common deal structures that can help widen the buyer pool. Seller financing probably being one of the best ways to do that. So I recently bought a Shopify SaaS application with a group of friends. We did something like 50% upfront. It was like $100,000, but we did 50K upfront and then 50K after 90 days, which really, you know, the goal as, you know, a founder when you're selling your business is to try to de-risk it as much as possible for the buyer, because they don't want to do 100% cash, then you just go away and then it's a disaster. So even just having like that short period where if anything goes wrong, there's a little bit of money left over for them to collect, can make all the difference. And so and then there's like equity swaps, you know, there's, you know, cash plus seller financing plus equity in the business. There's a number of different structures. If anyone wants to check that out, you can just go to resources.microquire.com. I've written like a whole book on it basically. Yeah, seller financing, the way it works is, again, you would sell the business for 50% cash upfront or 75%, 80%, 90%, whatever you agree upon. And then the remaining percentage is paid in an agreed period of time. So that could be a year, that could be 6 months, it could be 3 months. It could be done monthly, it could be done all at once. So in the transaction that I just described, we agreed to 100,000, 50% upfront, and then 50% after 90 days. And so for me, that let me know, hey, after we transfer the assets, if anything is missing or I miss something, you're going to be around to help. Just makes the acquisition go smoother and really just aligns the buyer, because you're always just trying to, you know, buyers want to de-risk the deal and sellers like want to get the deal done. And so that's a great way to bridge the gap.
I'm into this.
I can see the wheels turning. I'm just like, this is going to add some work, isn't it?
Let's go roll up these SaaS companies. Let's go roll them up. Key metrics and ratios. What do you got? What's a key metric and ratio for MicroQuire? Like you've talked through users per day, but like how many startups per day, or is that listings per day, I guess?
It depends. I would say we list about, so we're pretty picky. We have hundreds of, I would say thousands of startups that submit every single month. Out of that, we approve about 10% of those, if not less, maybe 8-9%. I'm just ballparking this. North Star metrics are closed acquisitions and increasing deal size. So our goal for MicroAcquire, even though, you know, we're working with Micro, but, you know, Microsoft had Micro in their name, so we got some help. But we want to move on to larger deals like 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million in annual recurring revenue and really support those types of deals. So those are the KPIs that we watch the most is, you know, how many acquisitions are successfully being closed? Because none of it matters if no deals are, you know, being acquired. No one wins there. And then we want to increase the size of the deals coming on to MicroAcquire. And that's where layering on the third-party services is so important because, like, in my situation selling business apps, there's no way I'm going to sell that business without even just light guidance. I had a friend that was just like, hey, that's a normal due diligence request. Hey, go to bed. Like, you're just, you know, just calm down. You know, it's a very emotional process. If it's going to be a life-changing outcome, you should definitely get proper representation. And so we're going to be building out the best directory of everyone from people that specialize in SaaS, e-commerce, deals over 10 million, under 10 million, micro SaaS, and also legal counsel as well. So those are the two main metrics is basically acquisitions closed and then increasing deal size.
Yeah, I'm into that. I'm into both those. Is the increasing deal size thing just because that's a more interesting space in the market or the buyers like of a higher caliber, or I guess why? Why is that a focus?
That's a good question. Well, I think that's where we can add the most value to these really complicated acquisitions. So typically, you know, you hire a bank and they run the whole process. They shop you around to Uber and all these strategic buyers typically. That process can take years. And so we feel that we can provide a better service that's more efficient and potentially allow for a higher sale price. But really, it's just been a request. A lot of our buyers are looking for larger businesses. So we're trying to get those. Like, we have, you know, literally billionaires within MicroAcquire, which is kind of cool. Like, I get nervous around people like that. Like,
sure.
why do you have $1 billion? Like, you don't need that.
Let me help you by introducing you to MicroAcquire.
Yeah. So long story short, there's a large interest in those types of businesses. And so we know that if we get the right businesses on MicroAcquire, we can sell them more efficiently. And we've had a number of cases like this recently where businesses have worked with, say, a traditional broker, moved over to MicroAcquire. One specific example was there was a Shopify SaaS application valued at like 1.2 from a broker, sold for 2.5. So double the EV that, or the valuation that the broker had given them. So we feel we built truly a more efficient way to sell your startup. And so we want to bring these bigger startups in because we have the buyers. And then we're going to be building out the tools and the resources and allowing you to build your team in terms of, you know, guidance, counsel, and everything you need to make sure the deal goes through smooth.
Man, that sounds awesome. I mean, now I'm just ready to... This happens every time.
Every time. Just like, poor Rand gets like a list of like 1,000 things. Hey
Rand, just talk to Andrew. Now here's 100 things we have to do. Yeah, man. Well, this was awesome. We're going to go ahead and close this thing down. If people want to check you out, how can they find you?
Sorry, I was taking a sip of water. Just Twitter, agazdecky, if you can spell that correctly. Good luck to you.
If you can't, I'm not gonna spell it out. Best of luck, right?
Or just shoot me an email, andrew@microacquire.com. I'm very accessible. Just look for, you know, me on LinkedIn as well. But just go to microacquire.com and you can probably find me there.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for coming on today, Andrew. This was great.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoyed the conversation.